T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
The special counsel's investigation did not find that the Trump campaign or anyone associated with it conspired or coordinated with Russia in efforts to influence the 2016 U.S. presidential campaign, unquote. That right there, folks, sums up the news of the weekend. For those of you who are regular Vince Coakley listeners, you've probably already figured out this is not the voice of Vince Coakley. He has got the day off, and I am honored to be in here. Glad you could join me. My name is Dave Thompson, and I'm a transplant to the Southeast from, I'm sure many of you picked up from Minnesota. But you'll forgive me. I'm trying to get a little bit of a drawl and learn to say y'all, and it's coming slowly, but we'll get there eventually. I'm like a dog. I'm not natively intelligent, but I am trainable. So we'll get there. All right, folks, for those of you who spent your time watching basketball, which I did for the most part until I found out I was going to be in here today, special counsel Robert Mueller, after a 675-day investigation into alleged conspiracy between the Trump campaign slash White House and the Russians, finally submitted his report to the Attorney General William Barr, as is required by law. And Barr wasted no time. I believe the report was actually submitted to him Friday or Saturday. Yesterday, the Attorney General William Barr submitted to congressional leaders a 3.5-page memo dated March 24th, in which he provided a summary of the special counsel's report. Now, there have been so many associated charges and claims and issues going on and being investigated that it's almost difficult to remember how all of this started. So let us take, shall we say, a little trip down memory lane. And it is interesting to note that in the second substantive paragraph of Attorney General Barr's memo, he says the report explains that the special counsel and his staff thoroughly investigated allegations that that members of the presidential campaign of Donald Trump and others associated with it, one, conspired with the Russian government in its efforts to interfere with the 2016 U.S. presidential election, or two, sought to obstruct the related federal investigations. There you have it. We have Carter Page out here being charged for this and that, and Roger Stone, and they went after James Corsi, and of course they went after numerous other people. The resources brought to bear on this, unbelievable. The special counsel noted that in completing his investigation, he employed 19 lawyers who were assisted by a team of approximately 40 FBI agents, intelligence analysts, forensic accountants, and other professional staff. The special counsel issued more than 2,800 subpoenas, executed nearly 500 search warrants, obtained more than 230 orders for communication records, issued almost 50 orders authorizing use of pen registers, made 13 requests to foreign governments for evidence, and interviewed approximately 500 witnesses. Wow. Where I grew up, that's pretty thorough. And after all of that, basically, we have two things to hang our hat on from this report, at least as relayed by the Attorney General William Barr. And that is that there was no evidence that the Trump campaign, the Trump administration, either Trump himself or people associated with Donald Trump, conspired with the Russians to try to rig the 2016 election. And in fact, what's interesting is it's even noted that there were offers made by Russians to do so, and nobody in the Trump campaign took the bait. So that was, I don't think it's exaggerating to say, complete vindication. Now, on the second issue of obstruction of justice, Special Prosecutor Mueller did something, Special Counsel Mueller did something that I consider to be unfortunate. Unfortunate for the nation, because what it did is it opened the door for this thing to continue on ad infinitum. And that is that he said, while there could not be produced sufficient evidence to charge Donald Trump or anyone associated with the Trump campaign with obstruction of justice, that by the same token, the campaign, Trump himself, etc., are not exonerated. So in other words, this is the equivalent of a prosecutor getting in front of a microphone and saying, well, we really can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt that Party A murdered Party B, but gosh, can't really say he didn't either. That's not how criminal investigations are supposed to work. How criminal investigations are supposed to work is that the prosecutor either obtains sufficient evidence to believe that they can find guilt beyond a reasonable doubt and they bring charges, or they just let the thing go. Because if you are not prosecuted in this country, if there is insufficient evidence to bring criminal charges against you, you are then not supposed to be left indefinitely with a cloud of suspicion hanging over you because you haven't been, quote unquote, exonerated. So the unfortunate thing is this leaves the door open for the zealots in Congress like Maxine Waters, Gerald Nadler, and others to say, oh, wait a minute here, hold the bus. Maybe on the Russian conspiracy thing, there's been vindication. But Mueller left the door open that just because he couldn't meet the criminal standard of proof, there still may well be evidence out there to support obstruction of justice. Now, you understand that you can have obstruction of justice even if the underlying charges are not legitimate. But it's a little bit odd to think that somebody who is completely innocent of wrongdoing, who has been exonerated by the prosecutor, would obstruct justice to prevent the prosecutor from getting to the information that would result in clearing his or her name. But that's the allegation now. The allegation is Trump did not conspire with the Russians. Trump associates did not conspire with the Russians, either during the campaign or post-inauguration. But they conspired, or they acted, or they tried to obstruct the ability of Mueller and his team from investigating the crime that now everybody admits did not happen. That seems a bit odd and a bit strange, but unfortunately that has been left open. Something that needs to be pointed out here, it is not hard to get an indictment. When you go before a grand jury as a prosecutor, you get to bring your evidence to bear, and there is no defense presented. There's an old saying, and I hate this saying. I have no idea what it means or where it came from, but I'll use it because you've probably heard it before. And that old saying is, you can indict a ham sandwich. The point being that when you as a prosecutor get to bring forth a version of the facts most favorable to your side of the story, with no opportunity for the defense to rebut anything, it's pretty easy to get an indictment. I mean, I really believe that if you gave me $40 million, the resources of the FBI and prosecutors, lawyers up the yin-yang, I could get Charles and John indicted in here on something. It's just not that hard. So I think the amazing part of this story is the fact that they spent all that time, all that money, had all those resources, and couldn't get something on Trump. I'm Dave Thompson, in for Vince Coakley. Back shortly. All right, I'm Dave Thompson, in here today for Vince Coakley. Thank you for joining me. I've got a lot more to say on this Robert Mueller report that was issued to the Attorney General. Attorney General William Barr then followed up by writing a summary memorandum to leaders of Congress, completely exonerating Donald Trump and those associated with Trump on the issue of Russia collusion, but not exactly giving a clean bill of health on the issue of obstruction of justice. Let's grab a couple calls here before we go on to the next thing. Tom, welcome. You're on the Vince Coakley Show with Dave Thompson.
Good morning, sir, Mr. Dave.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that this report clearly establishes Trump as the front runner and only runner for the Republican Party. I am a Democrat, and I've been watching and listening to this thing, and the only thing I can say as a Democrat, our party is in deep, deep trouble because we got a bunch of clowns out there running, like 10 or 12 of them, and the only people I can see that can even come up against Trump would be Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren. So thank you for letting me say that, and let's leave Trump alone and let's get on with the business of America.
Hey, Tom, hang on. I want to ask you a question. It's interesting. Do you think you are in the minority as Democrats go on your feelings, or do you believe that the garden variety, you know, hardworking American Democrat out there thinks that the leadership's gone off the rails and that your view is shared by a lot of people?
I think that nobody's mind has been changed about Trump. I think those who like Trump like him. Those who don't won't like him. But I think, and I'm going to tell you, I would never vote for Trump, but I admire him as a man that will take a stand. I truly admire him. I don't like his principle, don't like the thing that he says or does. If he would keep his mouth shut, he could be a great man, but he's a man that will tell you what he thinks. He's not a hypocrite. He believes in what he says, and he does what he says. And I like a man like that. But the Democrats, man, you got all these Kamala Harrises and other people that I've never even heard of. I come from the John Kennedy era, and the only people I can see that can do anything right for our party is Joe Biden and Elizabeth Warren.
All right. Thank you, Tom. I appreciate the phone call. All right, it's it is a bit interesting to see how the Democrats are going to handle this issue of the one wing of their party that wants to continue to go after Trump and nail him, and the other wing of their party that says nope, enough of that. We got to move on in life. Joe, welcome to the Vince Coakley Show.
Hello, sir. Nice to talk to you.
Same here.
I just want to say that there seems to me a real problem. Like you just said, you were talking about, if you had $40 million and a legion of lawyers, you could bring an indictment against anybody. So that's kind of like an extortion scheme, which is part of our legal system. And, you know, and it's a great danger for anybody to even be willing to serve in government in any capacity, except maybe as elected representative. Even then, because, you know, I remember I read this thing about Elliot Abrams, and this was 20 years ago in Reader's Digest, where they just drug him all through the dirt, and he had tons of legal bills, and he was innocent of everything, but he had to hire all these legion of lawyers to defend him, and then he stuck with all these legal bills, which is, you know, hanging over his head for life.
No, you're exactly right, Joe. I appreciate the call. That's right. A lot of people's lives have been ruined. And I think this is one area where, frankly, Republicans have dropped the ball over the years, and that Republicans have been more than happy to see the long arm of the law exercised sort of indiscriminately. But this is what happens when you have an overzealous prosecutorial system and you don't have sufficient safeguards in place for people who are subjected to a virtually unlimited amount of money and so on. By the way, at 10:36 here, in just a few minutes, we've got Loretta Powers coming up. She is a defense attorney who is going to talk about what the conclusions in the Mueller report mean and what might be happening going forward. Now, in a normal world, this would sort of end the discussion on this. I mean, let's not forget, the Democrats cannot in any way claim bias in this situation, bias in favor of Trump or against the Democrats. By everybody's report, Robert Mueller brought in a team of attorneys that were largely Democratic, largely anti-Trump type folks. And I wondered when he did that. I am a lawyer. I'm not a criminal lawyer, but I do practice law. And something that you tend to find is oftentimes if a judge has a sense that a particular party is probably favored to win a case, that things are going pretty well in the courtroom for that party, the judge will be the hardest on that side. They'll be less likely to sustain objections. They'll be more likely to make rulings that are unfavorable because then they've got themselves covered on appeal. And so as an attorney, when I saw that Robert Mueller had brought in a lot of anti-Trump, pro-Hillary Clinton, pro-Democrat zealots, my thinking was, you know, and of course the Sean Hannitys of the world and others went berserk saying, you see, this is just a, loading up the special counsel's office with people that are going to take Trump down no matter what. I had a little different take on it, and that was maybe Mueller's instinct is there probably isn't any there. There probably isn't any big-time collusion conspiracy with Russia. Conspiracy, by the way, is the word that should have been used all along and is, in fact, the word that was used by William Barr in this summary of Mueller's letter. Anyway, my suspicion is it's very possible that Mueller had a hunch that there wasn't much going on here and wanted to bring in a team of folks that would be viewed as somewhat anti-Trump, pro-Clinton, pro-Democrat, to insulate himself from the charge of bias. I mean, could you imagine if he'd have brought in 8 or 10 or 12 attorneys that had worked for George W. Bush, had worked for, you know, George H.W. Bush, were young, you know, attorneys in the Reagan White House, that goes back a ways now. If he'd have brought in a bunch of people like that, people right now, that's what the Democrats would be focusing on. They would be saying, well, of course they didn't find anything because these are all pro-Trump folk. So what Mueller did, in effect, was kind of made himself bias-proof. You can't argue bias with a straight face because, as I say, the folks that he had working with him were, by and large, Democrats. And that's why this, among many reasons, this discussion really ought to be ended. And remember, not only did Mueller have a lot of Democratic-type people in his office, Democrats themselves came out and said, well, we've got to wait on the special counsel's report. We've got to wait and see what Robert Mueller says. We can't rely on the ability of congressional investigators to get this done. Mueller has a long arm of the law behind him, and he's a former FBI guy and a genius, and he'll get this sucker handled. Now, all of a sudden, when Mueller didn't tell them what they wanted to hear, oh, no, we can't rely upon that. We can't take Mueller's conclusions at face value. And some Democrats are just blatantly out there almost saying, well, we don't accept this because we don't accept this. And we're not going to put up with it. When we return, Loretta Powers, a defense attorney, to talk to us about what the Mueller report means and what happens going forward. I'm Dave Thompson in for Vince Coakley. Welcome back to the program. This is the Vince Coakley Show. I am Dave Thompson in today talking about, what is a major story in this country with Robert Mueller over the weekend releasing his final report on the Trump-Russia investigation. Attorney General William Barr releasing a summary to the leadership of Congress and went ahead and made that summary public. You can go ahead and read it yourself. If you want, it's pretty easy to find out there on the internet. That's how I got my information. I didn't get it from somebody else. I went and read the document myself. We presumably have Attorney Loretta Powers that will be with us shortly. We're in the process of getting her on the line. But this really is kind of a watershed moment for the country, as we now should be able to more or less move on from the Robert Mueller investigation, from the Trump-Russia conspiracy theories. But as I mentioned earlier, Robert Mueller did something that I consider to be, well, certainly unfortunate, and frankly, I don't think it was the right thing for a prosecutor or a special counsel to do, and that is essentially said, there is insufficient evidence to prove collusion beyond a reasonable doubt, but, you know, that is not necessarily an exoneration. All right, we have Ms. Powers with us. Loretta Powers, welcome to the Vince Coakley Show. I'm Dave Thompson sitting in today. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for having me, Dave.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thanks for joining me. I happen to be a lawyer myself. I'm not a criminal lawyer, so I'll be very interested to get your perspective for those of us who are kind of lay people as it comes to the criminal law. Just give a brief summary of your view of William Barr's, summary of the Robert Mueller report and, you know, what that means in legal terms.
Well, I think it's going to work out better for the Trump administration than my basketball bracket is going to work out.
All right.
So, No, I think that Trump is not quite totally exonerated like he tweeted. He still needs to worry about New York State charges involving any business dealings and campaign violations. And as you know, a sitting president cannot be indicted. And if he is charged with anything on a federal level, I really do think that there's nothing stopping him from pardoning himself the last day of office. But he can't pardon himself on state charges. So that's going to be an issue. He still needs to watch out for that.
Do you think, and I understand that you're an attorney, but from a political standpoint, putting on a political analyst hat for a moment, don't you kind of feel like maybe the American people will say, listen, okay, there might be New York State charges out there on campaign violations, et cetera, these kind of minutiae, if you will, but Robert Mueller had the resources of the federal government, including $40 million and virtually unlimited access to investigative tools, and didn't find anything significant. Let's move on already.
Exactly, but the Dems are not quite over the fact that Hillary lost, and
that's
they
for
can't
sure.
really accept the fact. They can't accept the fact that there was no cheating, and so they will say that there is still more to investigate, and this will last for the entirety of President Trump's term.
Well, I don't think that's a good thing for the nation, and I also think that given the fact that the Democrats have rhetorically hung their hat on the Robert Mueller report for so long, saying that's the linchpin of this whole deal. Now they get a result they don't like and they refuse to accept it. I don't think that'll look good. I want your opinion on, Robert Mueller, apparently, assuming that Attorney General Barr is accurately relaying the information contained in Mueller's report, which we have every reason to believe he is, because if he's not, he'll be outed. We got what I think the president can fairly characterize as vindication on the Russia-Trump campaign administration collusion issue. But then Mueller does this bizarre thing where he says, well, I didn't find sufficient evidence to prosecute for obstruction of justice, but, there was some stuff out there that, maybe the attorney general's office ought to take a look at it. Isn't that an odd way for a prosecutor to behave?
I think so. I mean, are you going to charge them with obstruction or not? If
yes.
So, do it and move on. So you don't have to waffle so much and confuse the American public like this. So at the end of the day, I don't think there's going to be any obstruction charges. They would have to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt, and I don't think the evidence is there. But there were 37 indictments. All but six were for Russians. So, and as long as they stay in Russia, they're not going to see the inside of an American courtroom. So I believe that this was all for nothing. I mean, I think people actually feel sorry for Paul Manafort.
Yes.
And I'm a huge believer, you reap what you sow. But if it wasn't for this investigation, he probably would have gotten away with all of the bank fraud.
Oh, yeah.
And now he'll spend the rest of his life in jail.
Yeah, there's no doubt, and sometimes I think people on both sides of the aisle, including my side, the conservative side, overhype things. But that is one statement that sounds radical, but it is true. If Paul Manafort had not been associated with the Donald Trump campaign, he would be a free man the rest of his life. Instead, he may well die in prison, and there's something whacked about that.
Exactly, because he was only involved for 30 days.
Yes.
So I bet he's regretting hitching his horse to Trump's wagon.
Oh, my goodness. There's no question about that. My guest is Loretta Powers, a criminal defense lawyer. We are talking about the William Barr summary of Robert Mueller's report. Do you think that congressional committees, of course, Gerald Nadler wants to continue pushing that sort of thing. Do you believe that there is anything they can turn up that Robert Mueller couldn't turn up using the full force of the federal government and an unlimited number of prosecutors and FBI agents? I mean, really, do you think there's anything out there that he wouldn't have found?
Absolutely not. The prosecution had a ton of power, unlimited resources, and 22 months. I don't think they're going to give that to any committee. It's absolutely ridiculous. And, the next thing we need to be concerned about is how much of this report will actually be released. Now, Bernie Sanders wants the entire thing in its entirety to be released. However, the Department of Justice seldom releases information about people who they don't want to charge. And can you imagine this? Let's say you are falsely accused of a crime.
Yeah.
And they had unlimited resources, and they dug and dug and invaded your privacy. You wouldn't want that released. So I think it's going to look like a wiffle ball.
No, I think that's right.
Heavily redactions and executive privilege.
You know, I wonder, Loretta, if Republicans end up succeeding in the 2020 election, if we're going to rethink this whole, you know, independent counsel statute and all of that stuff, because I'm one of these conservatives that I was kind of a civil libertarian before it was cool. And this kind of stuff really concerns me, as you say, innocent people or people who maybe committed some relatively minor process crime and their lives end up being destroyed. I got 60 seconds. What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's ridiculous. I mean, people have gone bankrupt fighting in legal fees just to clear their name. It's absolutely ridiculous. I think that they will revisit the statute. I don't think it will be overturned, though. I think it's just a sad thing that our nation has to deal with.
I agree with you. Loretta Powers, defense lawyer, criminal defense lawyer, thank you for shedding some light on the Mueller report and the Barr summary. I sincerely appreciate you coming on. You have a great day.
Thank you, Dave.
All right, you betcha. So that is Loretta Powers, and boy, there I said you betcha. See, I maintained my Minnesota street cred, didn't I?
Yes.
Yeah, me and I hang out with Sarah Palin in Alaska, and we do you betchas. All right, Dave Thompson in for Vince Coakley. We shall be back shortly. Welcome back to the Vince Coakley Show. I'm Dave Thompson sitting in. Thank you for joining me. If you'd like to weigh in on the conversation, the phone number is 704-570-1110. At 11:06, Rachel Sutherland of Fox News standing by. Kind of a straight-up report, what's going on in Washington, D.C., and what is the reaction to this weekend's report. 704-570-1110. Stan, welcome to the program.
Hi. I wanted to ask you about the complexity of the law in general. Like I had a organization did an analysis of 30 CPAs preparing the same information, and they buried all across the board. Imagine you own an $11 billion construction company. How much more complex that would be?
Yep.
I know that you were a congressman and you had to deal with campaign finance laws. Suppose now they were to go back and say that you won. How did you deal with that, and could anybody go back now and analyze, if you had 22 lawyers analyze your campaign finance stuff, what would they find? And it's almost like you can selectively prosecute people based on who won.
You know, Stan, you're exactly right, and I did serve in the Minnesota Senate for 6 years, and of course had to comply with all of the campaign finance laws that applied to me when I ran, and it is very complicated. It is very easy to make an absolutely innocent mistake. And ironically, Stan, I think the lower level office that you're running for, sometimes the easier it is to make the mistake. Because if you're running for state senate, state house, you know, certainly school board or city council, you don't have the resources to hire people that are learned in the law, that have been, you know, doing this for quite some time. If you're running for president or United States Senate or United States House, presumably if you're, you know, a serious candidate and you're raising money, you can pay for those things. But no, Stan, your point is exactly correct. I guarantee you, although I tried to dot every I and cross every T and I am a lawyer, I guarantee you if somebody dug into my campaign finance reports from when I ran, they could find something. I guarantee it. And that's not the way our law ought to operate. Our law should punish intent to do bad things. And it's out of control, not just in the campaign finance area, but as you say, you referred to CPAs. And of course, every time we come around to tax season, we have this deal where, you know, 10 people call the Internal Revenue Service, read from the exact same script, ask a question, and invariably get 10 separate answers, 10 different answers. So, you know, when people who work for these organizations don't understand the law, how are you and I supposed to?
Well, you know, and even in the election, even in this past election, where we're getting the new election here in District 9, you know there was just as much fraud in the 2016 gubernatorial race. And the only reason it wasn't investigated then is because the people who control the committees, their party won. That's what kills people.
No, that's right. And thank you. I appreciate the phone call. And you know, the thing that is disturbing to me, and this is a little bit of a frolicking detour here, but it was brought up by Stan, is the more complexity, the more methods we have for voting that we introduce into the election system, the harder it is to keep it under control. And these people that try to tell you, oh, early voting isn't a problem, electronic voting isn't a problem, are you kidding me? When you find out what, you know, Mark Zuckerberg's company Facebook can do, when you find out what Google can do, when, you know, hardly a month goes by that you don't hear of some major data breach by companies that have hacked, are you telling me that it's not possible to fraudulently cast electronic votes? Hey, come on. You have to be kidding me. Here's a major irritation of mine. And Stan brought up, you know, the election law, which drives me crazy. When we get in debates about photo ID or any sort of election fraud protection kinds of things, oh, we get people on the left that remove their hat and put it over their heart and start singing the national anthem as they say, the vote is the most sacrosanct thing there is. It is the most important thing that you as a citizen will ever do in your life. It means so much to me that I would, crawl over broken glass to get to the voting booth to vote. Oh, but we can't go on election day. Yeah, we can't. We can't be forced to go on election day. You got to open up early voting, 3 months before the election. And you've got to make it as easy as possible. And for those of us who are too lazy to get off our hind end and actually go do it, we want to be able to vote electronically. Well, which is it? Is this the most important thing in your life, that for someone to be denied the right to vote is the equivalent of denying them life itself on the one hand? But then on the other hand, oh, well, we can't go vote on election day. We can't be expected to do that, even though employers are required by law to give you the time off to go do it. The disingenuousness of that argument is just utterly amazing to me. So the point being, we shouldn't have a bunch of people voting before the election, because oftentimes facts come to bear right before an election that change people's minds. And it is not right that on election day, a very, very high percentage of people have voted, many of whom voted well before all the facts were in on the election. For example, let's go with the 2016 presidential election and James Comey's revelation right near election day about Hillary Clinton. A lot of people voted that had no idea that that story was going to happen, and it had a dramatic impact upon the election. So, and back to the fraud issue and the complexity issue and all that, the more methods we create for voting, the more, error we introduce into the system, the worse it gets. All right, when we come back, we'll have Rachel Sutherland on from Fox News. I'm Dave Thompson, in for Vince Coakley.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.